The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
We are a principle-based, truth-seeking, justice-seeking, welcoming faith community in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, on the web at tpuuf.org. And thanks to the wonders of technology and the skill of our tech managers, we're wherever you may be this Sunday morning in the comfort of your own home. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Fellowship. And I remind everyone here in the sanctuary to make sure your cell phone is silenced or turned off to avoid distractions and interruptions in this morning's worship service. And the committee and the fellowship want to assure you that whoever you are, wherever you may be on your life's journey, on your spiritual journey, whatever you must in conscience truly, responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you, you are welcome here and invited to join us in worship this Sunday morning and every Sunday morning. We extend a special welcome to anyone visiting us for the first or second time, or for the first time in a long time. If you're not already connected with us or still connected with us, please fill out the visitor's card. You'll find a copy of it in the lobby, or if you're attending online, you'll find a link to that visitor's card in the chat box. And if you fill out the card, you'll keep abreast of events and activities here at the Thomas Paine Fellowship. And we offer a special welcome as well to Reverend Andrew Weber. Reverend Andrew is no stranger to most of us. He's filled our pulpit more than a half a dozen times in the past few years, including for our annual flower communication service this past June. We welcome him back this morning, however, in his new role as our minister. We look forward to a long, productive association with Andrew. And to his message this morning that will further introduce him to us and remind us of the emphasis that our Unitarian Universalist Covenant places on shared ministry. And I turn the pulpit over now to Reverend Andrew for opening words, after which we'll light our chalice and our peace lamp and sing our gathering song.
We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This community of laughter and silence, memory and hope is hallowed by our presence together. This community, some in person, some virtual, this gathering, which will never be duplicated in the exact fashion, is hallowed by your presence here today. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. I am glad you are here. Come, let us worship together. It is so good to be with you here this morning. As Jerry said, I'm Reverend Andrew Weber. You can always call me Andrew or Reverend Andrew. You don't have to get really formal. And I'm truly honored to be serving Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship as minister. We are a welcoming and nurturing community dedicated to inspiring spiritual growth and fellowship for adults and children, caring for our environment, promoting social justice and equality in the larger community. Our faith is a personal one where each person believes and lives what they must. Our faith is also a global one, shared across countries. We join now with Unitarian Universalists across the country and with Unitarians around the globe as we light our flaming chalice, the symbol of our free and loving religion.
Does the chalice and the flame together form the symbol of our free faith?
They signify many things, including our openness to the wisdom of many ages, cultures, and traditions, our aspiration to keep the light of truth, the warmth of compassion, and the fire of commitment to justice and liberty burning within ourselves and throughout our world. And this morning, we light our chalice with words by Reverend Erica Hewitt, Unitarian Universalist Association's Minister of Worship, Arts, and the editor of Braver Wiser, a weekly spiritual guide. Her words remind us of the courage and the encouragement necessary to build a beloved community. With full hearts, we affirm our relationships with one another. We recognize our agency and our connective power, and we accept our responsibility to be bold and courageous. We light this chalice, symbol of all that we are, all that we have done together, and all that we will be, as our shared ministry encourages those within and beyond our walls. And now, as Andrew lights our peace lamp, please participate by responding and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us.
With all the people of the world.
It's time now for our gathering song, hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us. The words, set to a traditional folk melody, written by an award-winning musician, songwriter, and children's educator, Sally Rogers. Ms. Rogers' words remind us that when we give from deep within us, we can change the world with our lives. The choir of the First Unitarian Church of Baltimore, Maryland, leads us in singing Love Will Guide Us. The words will appear on the screen behind me and on your computer screen at home. And when we finish singing, Andrew will share a story with us and lead the remainder of the service. Please come forward. If you are young in age or in heart, you may come forward. Do you want to sit right here? Because then I can show them the pictures too. Maybe you want to sit next to me, because I was going to hold it like this. So that, can the camera get this one?
Right here? We'll see. We'll see. We may have to change logistics to make it work. Hi, Roland. I'm Andrew. Nice to meet you. This is called Ordinary Mary's Extraordinary Deed. Well, we'll do what we can. Adults may just have to hear it. So if you want to see it, if you want to see it, come on up. I'm just saying, if you want to see the pictures. Ordinary Mary was so very ordinary that you'd never guess she could change the world. This ordinary kid, she did. She changed the world. And you can, adults, you can borrow this later if you want to see it. One ordinary day, skipping on her way from her ordinary school to her ordinary house, she passed an ordinary vacant lot filled with ordinary bushes growing ordinary berries. Ordinary blue and juicy, luscious, lovely berries. Lots of berries. Well, Ordinary Mary picked the ordinary berries and brought them in a big brown bowl to Miss Bishop's porch. What? Left berries in a big brown bowl on Mrs. Bishop's porch? That sneaky kid she did. This made Mrs. Bishop very, very happy. So she baked a big batch of blueberry muffins and thought of five people who might have brought those beautiful berries, then secretly gave each a plate. How great! Five people got a plate. You can come out at any time. One of those five was her paper boy, Billy Parker. And when Billy saw his name on a note in the driveway on a plate, he quickly parked his bike and ate every crumb. Oh, yum, yum, yum. He ate every crumb. This made him so glad that the next five people got their papers on the porch and not in the bushes where he often threw them. In fact, they were handed right to them. One of those five was Mr. Morey, who was so amazed that he smiled for 10 hours on the airplane, then said to five different people who had heavy bags, "Here, let me help you." He still smiled, and they did too. One of those five was Mario, whose cranky little boy James stopped crying when Mr. Morey played peekaboo with him until their ride came. When he waved goodbye, Mario exclaimed, "How strange that a stranger would be so kind." And the next day when he was out shopping, once, twice, five times, he did something nice for five different people. Five times without stopping. One of those five was Joseph, old and bent and gray, in front of him in line at the produce stand. When he said, "I guess I counted wrong. I don't really need these oranges." Little James reached out to him with an orange from their basket, and Mario put a coin in Joseph's hand and said, "Here, take this. The oranges are on us." As Joseph shuffled to the bus, his heart was full and his eyes were wet, and his hands did helpful things for the next five people he met. One of those five was Sahar, a college girl who was off to see the world and stopped at Joseph's shop. When her bag broke and her things fell all over the floor, she said, "Oh, what will I do?" Joseph said, "This is for you," and he gave her a new bag, woven with his own hands in red and purple and green. "Oh, thank you," she said. "It's the loveliest bag I've ever seen." When Zahar left, she felt sunny as a noon, and she just had to shine on five people soon. One of those five was Sophia, whom she met on a boat, looking like the world might end, looking like someone without a friend. "What beautiful blue eyes you have," Sahar said, "and they're just the color of the flowers in your lovely dress." "Yes," said Sophia. "Oh, yes," said Sahar. The beautiful blue eyes shed a happy tear, and when the boat trip was through, Sophia called five people to make them happy too. One of those five was Tom, her son the doctor, who was having a very hard day. "Hi," she said. "I love you, Tom." "Well, how great to hear your voice," he sighed. "I always need my mom." Dr. Tom was so cheered up that his next break, he brought a big bunch of bright balloons for five young patients, and he handed them out right there and then. One of those five was Peter, a little boy who went home from the hospital that very day. Gratitude for such a big bunch of bright balloons filled him and thrilled him and spilled out of him and onto the next five people who came his way. One of those five was Eric, a teenage boy whose sacks and such were way too much. When one dropped on the sidewalk, Peter stopped his play and rushed right over, saying, "Super wheels, to the rescue!" Well, Eric no longer stressed and was very impressed and made a mental note that very afternoon to help five people and do it soon. One of those five was Di, his 10-year-old sister, who didn't have many friends and was painfully shy. When Eric said, "Hey, sis, want to come to the park and learn how to ride my skateboard?" she looked at him wide-eyed. "Serious?" she cried. "Sure," he said. And because of her brother, Di decided maybe she could be a friend to another five. One of those five was Louise, a homeless woman who lived under the trees. She could hardly believe her ears when she heard Di say, "May my brother and I buy you a hot dog and a drink at that stand over there?" Could it be true? Someone actually cared? Cared enough to give her food and a smiley-faced ring that was practically new? Louise was so pleased that she decided that even though she had nothing, she would find five others and give them something. One of those five was Amara, who lost her wallet in the park. Louise found it, full of fives and tens and twenties. Oh, what she could do with all that money. But she found Amara's name and called her home, and over she came. Amara was so impressed that Louise was honest. When money was something she clearly needed, that she offered her a job in her store and vowed to do something generous for five people or more. One of those five was Kate, a woman on vacation who wanted to see a show she'd heard was a sensation. "Oh no," she said, "it's sold out, but I'm going home tomorrow," and her face filled with sorrow. Amara held out her ticket. "I live here," she said. "I can go anytime. Take mine." Kate loved the show and was so touched that she thought buying five presents for five people back home would be really fun. And one of those five presents was a little heart necklace for Mary, her niece. And you should have seen her eyes light up in surprise. Who's that Mary? Mary? What? Ordinary Mary? Yes, Ordinary Mary's extraordinary deed had come full circle. And on its way, it had changed lives of every person living. You see, when Mrs. Bishop made muffins from Mary's blueberries, not only the paper boy, Billy Parker, but the other four people too made five people smile. And those five did too. And after a while, in only 16 days, love was sent to every person everywhere. Just see how it went. Five times five times five times five times five times five gets up to 30,517,578,125. Well, 30 billion is way more than all of the people on the planet. So after everyone had a share and everybody knew that everyone cared, there was even love left over. The world was changed, and thousands and millions and billions agreed it was all because one ordinary day, Ordinary Mary did a perfectly ordinary, stunningly earth-shaking, totally extraordinary deed. There ends our story, and I'm going to challenge everyone, not just those here, everyone, to see what extraordinary deed you can do. And I'm going to challenge our congregation, too. We're going to do something a little bit different, if that's okay with the tech people back there. Instead of going to our normal singing out, let's go to the next hymn. And as we're singing that hymn, the children can go off to their classes. How does that sound? Let's do it. Thank you so much for joining me here. And you can go back to your parents. Thanks, Ron. This is 10:51, We Are. And please rise in body or in spirit.
For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are our grandmother's prayers, and we are our grandfather's dreamings, and we are and the sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy, brothers of love, lovers of life, and the builders of nations. We're seekers of truth, keepers of faith, makers of peace, and the wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandfather's dreamings. And we are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are mothers of courage, fathers of time, daughters of dust, and the sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy, brothers of love, lovers of life, and the builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith. We are makers of peace and the wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandfather's dreamings. And we are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are our grandmother's prayers. And we are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are
words. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are our grandmother's dreams. We are our grandfather's prayer. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. I am the breath of my ancestors. That's some deep, deep truth. That's truth which shows power, which shows responsibility. So thank you, Issei Barnwell, for that amazing message and that amazing ministry. For that is ministry. That's her ministry, sharing from deep within, witnessing to a larger truth, larger than herself, providing hope, providing impetus for change, providing an opportunity for transformation. And that's what I'm here to talk about today, is what ministry is for me and what our ministry might look like together. My beliefs and our beliefs and how we might live out Unitarian Universalist values and ideals as a community. For, as Jerry said, I've been here before, but we are beginning a journey today. A journey where a congregation and a minister start to work together, where we strive for self and community betterment, where we look toward communal justice and personal growth. So I start with an introduction about me as a minister and what you can expect from me. There's a saying among ministers, you know, we get together, we'd be maybe interested in what ministers share when they're only among ministers. They're human, we're human. But there's a saying among ministers that we each only have one message. And then we preach that one message over and over again in different ways. With each sermon that we deliver, the underlying message is the same, merely switching the outward particulars. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, to have one message that permeates every sermon. If that message witnesses, just like you say, Barnwell, witnesses to a larger truth, provides hope, provides inspiration, impetus for change, opportunity for transformation. So thinking of my sermons as different ways to grasp, different ways to portray that one message is humbling. It's very humbling to say, oh, I only have one message. But it's also very freeing to say, that's my focus. And I already know what I'm going to say, because I know what that message is. So now I just have to think about how I'm going to say that. So here's my message. Here's my one sermon. If you came today, you got it. So you don't have to come again. You're like, check. Okay, I'm good. Right, this is my one sermon that I've come to see. I didn't realize this until years into my ministry. This is what I witnessed to, and this is what I preach many times. In three words, live your faith. Live your faith. It can be summed up in two questions that I like to ask. What's your theology? And how do you live it? Now these aren't easy questions, right? This isn't like, oh, well, yeah, I can just rattle those off. No. These are ones that get right to the heart of my main focus of embodied faith, of embodied religion. I have an online blog I've been writing for a number of years now where I reflect on this topic with specific examples. And only after I've been writing it for many years did I realize, oh my gosh, this is my message, is live your faith. My blog is titled How to Drive Like a Minister, where I reflect on exactly that, on how to live every day, quote, every day, our faith. What we say we believe deep in here, in our hearts. Now, for those of us who are new, for those of us who may be visitors online or in person, or it was your first or second time, you may wonder why I haven't mentioned Jesus or God yet. I'm talking about faith. I'm talking about religion, the essence. That's a good question. It's a really good question because our religion, Unitarian Universalism, has Christian roots. And it looks Protestant, if you just looked at this without what I'm saying, it looks Protestant in how things are formatted, how we gather and how we worship. But in current form, it's not Christian. I say in its current form because Unitarian Universalism is both a very old and a very new faith. Officially consolidated in the 1960s, we hail from two faith traditions, that's Unitarianism and Universalism, both of which trace their history to the Protestant Reformation, and each based on ideas present at the birth of Christianity. The historical Unitarian belief, that there is one God instead of three in the Trinity. The historical Universalist, universal belief that everyone will go to heaven. Currently, our religion is one of freedom of thought, where everyone is encouraged and challenged to believe what they know as true in their deeper, deepest, inmost being. Like Jerry said, you can't believe whatever you want. You can believe what you must believe. And to hold those beliefs while staying in community. Yes. Oh, hold on, it just got a lot harder there. Right? One of our religious forebears, a universalist minister, Hosea Ballou, has this to say, which I love this. Great. There is one inevitable criterion of judgment touching religious faith and doctrinal matters. That's big words. He's saying this is what's important about faith. Can you reduce it to practice? If not, have none of it. He's speaking my language. He's saying, can you live your religion? If you can't, then maybe find a different religion. Chuck it out. Ditch it. Now, you may see the difficulty with what Ballou said and what I am saying, because we aren't telling everyone to do the same thing, right? So if you identify as Christian, the person next to you in this congregation, virtually in person, the person next to you may identify as atheist. So we're not holding the same personal faith. You may look to the Buddha for faith guidance, and your beloved may seek truth in nature. That's the freedom. And that's the challenge of this great religion, the freedom and challenge that we all need to start with a really big question. What is your faith? What beliefs do you hold dearest to your inmost being? What are those truths and what are those ideals which define who you are? This is great fodder for discussion. I really like this. I mean, I guess it's not surprising being a minister. I love this stuff. But when you gather over coffee or tea after the service, or when you're in virtual social hour, or when you go out to lunch, when you're at home, taking the dog for a walk with a family member, use these questions. Use them. Nice to meet you, or good to see you again. What brings you here this morning? Great. Okay, what are the religious truths that define you? get there, right? That's get there. I'm joking, but only a little bit, because this is a safe space. This is a place where we should be able to have those questions and say, hey, I'm Andrew. I came here today because I'm hired. But now let's talk about what defines my essence. We speak of being open to truths other than our own, right? That's what we speak about all the time as Unitarian Universalists. We speak about being open to truths other than our own. Show it by caring, by asking, by hearing truths other than your own. And I'll start. I can't give you this task and not say, here's an example. I believe in life and in love. That which I hold as most dear, most important above all else is promoting love and promoting life. I do use the terms divine and God, which some people may have history with, but these are the terms I use to encompass my beliefs, which often span my own understanding. And I tend to show by example. This is probably why I write a blog about driving and theology, is I like those concrete examples. And my example is right here, right now. Right here, yes, right here, right now. Because I believe that there is something else than just us here. We are greater than just the sum of our parts. When we make connections, we become more than just a person and another person, just the people gathered here. Just the people gathered here, too. Yes, there's a connection. I feel this for all of life. Yes, life is holy, but there's something more. There's something more, something that cannot be touched or seen. And that's the God that I believe in. That's the all-encompassing feeling of life, of love, the collective deity which is witnessed to and created through relationships. If you want an official theological term, because I know someone's like, okay, that's great. Now, what's the theological term so I can look it up? It's panentheism. Panentheism, that God is all and something more. And something more. The source of life. The source of life and life itself. Life interacting. That is God. I have another quote. This one by a Jewish theologian, Martin Buber. And he said, when two people relate to each other authentically and humanly, God is the electricity that sparks between them. That's the divine that I attempt to witness to. I try to create and I try to embody and support. That I try to create, embody, and support in everything I do, which is so hard. I reflect online about driving like a minister because I want to share. I want to share. This is what I think works, but also because I want to be religious outside of Sunday, and me reflecting on it helps me do that. I want to embody my faith and not just talk about it. So I practice. I mess up. I write. I pray. I talk with others. I probably mess up again. I preach. I reflect and I keep on trying. The book we read, Mary, Ordinary Mary's Extraordinary Deed, that's my definition of God right there. And it's a great example of living one's faith. Mary picked berries. She gave them to a friend who made muffins, who did something else kind, passed it on and on. That right there, that's divine, that's God. God isn't mentioned in there, but that book, that's God. That's my definition of God. Driving like a minister for me means waving someone else when they're trying to merge. Saying, oh, of course, go ahead. And when that person then waves in the next person, you've just created God on a small scale. But that's why you do it every day. The examples are myriad. The hard part is keeping our theology in the front of our minds when we don't want to or when it's difficult, right? When it's hard. Someone cuts me off in traffic, a beep or tailgate. Is that creating God? Is that creating connections and love? No, there's no spark of the divine. And that'll be a different sermon for a different day, but I'm not witnessing to the other person's inner beauty. And I'm not making a divine connection when I lash out in anger rather than thinking, oh, but my faith holds me to this action. The task then is to take our beliefs, to sit with them and then to try to live them out. As the Reverend Bill Gardner has said, we all have two religions. The religion we talk about and the religion we live. It is our task to make the difference between the two as small as possible. Amen. Amen. We all have two religions, the religion we talk about, the religion we live, and our task is to make that difference as small as possible. What does that look like for you? What does that look like for you? How will I know your values when I'm a passenger in your car with you? Or by what you eat? Or by where you shop? How will I know your values? What does how you act in your everyday life say about what you hold as most dear? Which brings me sort of full back. It brings me the whole way back around to ministry, about how I live my faith professionally. My professional calling, I feel, is to help empower others to reach their full potential, to create space for transformation, for self-discovery, and new energy. So I want to work with you to help you live your faith, to help us live our faith personally, as a congregation. Ministry is something which is shared. It's shared, for all of you have insights into your own truths, into our communal truth. I don't have the answers. I don't have all the answers, and I shouldn't. I shouldn't. Ministry is something which is best unshared. Shared ministry is recognizing everyone's value, everyone's insight. Shared ministry is allowing space for others while keeping space for ourselves. And shared ministry is stepping up in leadership. And shared ministry is being vulnerable, open to change, and sometimes stepping back. So check this out. Check this out. I'm gonna try to embody what I'm talking about. Can you see that? I'm getting meta here. I'm like, oh, embody your faith. Now I'm going to try to embody it right now. Next week, I'm going to talk more about shared ministry and the role we all play in creating a loving, just, and responsible world. But I can't do it without you, right? I mean, I can't do it without you. How much can I stand up here and tell you that we're doing shared ministry together? It doesn't sound very shared to me. It sounds like one guy getting up and talking. Next week, there's going to be a time for a theological and practical Q&A. And I'm introducing it today so that you can think about what you might want to ask. That's not flat. What you might want to ask of me, this can be anything. Questions about my path to ministry, advice on how to respond to hate, and more. The gamut. So you can show up next week with your question, or you can plan ahead. These are the note cards I'm going to put in the back of the sanctuary. So after you sit and reflect during the postlude, they'll be back there. You can grab one. Take it with you as a reminder for a question. You can just show up. You can take a note card as a reminder. Bring it back next week with a question on it. If you're online, or if you won't be here in person, you're like, well, I don't know if I'll come or I'm out of town. That's fine. Just send me an email, minister@tpuuf.org. I got my email worked out, too. That was one of the first things we did. minister@tpuuf.org. Yes, thank you. If you're a visitor, if you're a member, if this is your first time, if this is your 50th time, the invitation is open to you. Yes. Yes, even you. I want to hear from you. I hope this is obvious. I hope I'm being overt and obvious about my views on shared ministry. Your input matters. Your thoughts, your beliefs, your questions matter. I'm not a minister here to be in charge. I'm the lead minister of a group of ministers. As each of you all, you all have your own ministry. You all have your own calling in this community, in this world. When you live your faith, when you witness to something greater than yourself, when you provide space for connections, when you provide space for growth, that's ministry. Your ministry is that area of your life which brings you joy and energy, where you come alive, and where that overlaps, when that overlaps with a need that exists, where connections are made, wow, beautiful. You say Barnwell preaches through music. Emily Pearson, the author of this book, witnesses to a larger truth through storytelling. Where do you feel that call and that answer? Think about it. Think about your values. Think about your innermost beliefs. And then think about how those beliefs get lived into the world and how you live your faith. So here are my questions. What do you believe? Show me. Go. Live it. Amen. We come together each week out of the multitude of our own lives. It is good and holy that you bring everything with you. You do not have to check part of you at the door. And part of that means that we come with joy overflowing, with sorrow overflowing. And so we share each week. If you have a joy or a sorrow which you feel must be shared with this community, please come forward. And I may mess up here, but I think we generally do in person and then online. Great. Okay, I got it. So come forward in person, and then we'll take some time for those of you online to share.
We'll have a brief musical interlude to allow you to gather your thoughts in addition to the meditation we just concluded. So this will be Prayer Shawl by Christine Perry. This time of sharing to a close, we will join together singing hymn number 123, Spirit of Life, and the words and will show up on the screen here in just a minute.
I extinguish both our peace lamp and our chalice and close with these benediction words, again from the Reverend Bill Gardner. We all have two religions, the religion we talk about and the religion we live. It is our task to make the difference between those two as small as possible. Amen, and blessed be. Let us sing our closing song. Please rise in body or in spirit. We'll build a land.